Good afternoon. I'll call this meeting of the House Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order. First up, I will ask Vice Chair Agbaje if she would move the minutes.
Yes, some move, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. I will note a quorum is present. And with that, we have seven bills up today. And we'll see if we can get through them. If not, we do have Friday reserved as an option for us. We may meet on Friday. But first, we're going to do a little order switch and go to Representative Lislegarde with House File 2344. Representative Lislegarde, thanks for joining us. I will make the motion that House File 2344 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And we'll go to Representative Lislegarde to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 2344 with you today. Not uncommon across the state, we are hearing and seeing the challenges and barriers that lack of housing and childcare are having on our people and our communities and our economy. Northland Foundation has served as a region hub of support and connection for childcare for a number of years. This bill would allow them to provide a similar support for northern Minnesota. As a former mayor, I know for most communities, tackling housing challenges and taking advantage of opportunities can be very difficult. Almost every community in my district has housing needs, like many of you, but not all have the tools and the people that can help us achieve those goals. We believe a regional approach would most effectively benefit us. The Northland Foundation would be able to be that regional hub across all of Northeast Minnesota in helping cities tackle their housing issues. They have a proven record on this type of work, relationships across the region, the experience in working with state funds. As a former city councilor and a mayor, I can tell you that a lot of these communities in greater Minnesota and Northeast Minnesota, where I'm actually trying to focus our attention today, that there are a lot of them are one-stop shops. They're lucky if they have a city administrator. They do not have economic development. They don't understand the system, the process, and how complicated it is, so therefore they don't try. I'll use myself as an example when I was on the HRA. We thought we were going to try to do the right thing, and we used taxpayer dollars, and we spent $47,000 doing the best that we could. And this is like, 17 years ago. And we basically did nothing with that money. We plotted a piece of property that really is undevelopable because we had no idea. And that is what we can't do. With the housing shortages, the needs across our region, and the lack of expertise and the wherewithal to be able to navigate through this complex system, that is why that I am asking for this this support for this to go through an organization. The Northland Foundation, underneath the leadership of Tony Sertich, is second to none. And we couldn't think of a better partner, somebody to help us navigate through all of Northeast Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, I have a good friend of mine that is well known in this body. He was the former majority leader out of Chisholm, obviously the center of the universe. I thought it was Aurora, but David Tomasoni always told me no. But I do have him here to expand on this and walk through the process.
Thank you, Representative Lislegarde. Former Majority Leader Sertich, when I started in the House, I was a staff person when you were the Majority Leader here, so this feels a little different. but I'm so glad for you to be joining us. Thank you.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and Committee. And actually, I got my start at the Capitol as a Committee Legislative Assistant in the Senate, so that's where my heart and journey began here. Thanks for the opportunity to be before you today. Tony Sertich, President and CEO of the Northland Foundation. We're a regional community foundation that serves the seven counties and five tribal nations in northeastern Minnesota. We focus a lot of our attention on grant making for a lot of basic needs, programming around children and youth and intergenerational work, and we have business services where we're a gap financer and provide business consulting services to small businesses. And I just want to paint real quick, take 30 seconds to paint a picture of what rural looks like in northeastern Minnesota. The seven counties that we represent, only seven of the 87, actually comprise over 20% of the land mass for the state of Minnesota. So one-fifth of the land is in those seven counties, yet only 5% of the population. So you're talking about a very rural and distributed amount of people. If all of northeastern Minnesota was one community, it would be the second largest community in the state, roughly the same size as our state capital city here of St. Paul. So you're talking about over 130 communities, and as Representative Liz Ligard said, many of them have a city administrator, very little staff to tackle all of the challenges they have, and housing has become that much more complex and hard to tackle for all of these communities. They all have the same challenge of housing, but they all have different strengths, different tools, and different assets. And so the idea of this proposal is for us to be more the toolbox for the entire region, as we have the relationships, as we know how to manage state dollars and others, and we can bring together this toolbox to bring to every community to say, what do you need? What are the tools that you need? And let us help you try to tackle those challenges and take advantage of opportunities. We have many great partners in the region, from One Roof Community Housing, that's St. Louis County, for example. Their tax forfeited land department is doing an exceptional job identifying plots, many different entities to bring together. And we wouldn't be the expert. We would be the convener and the hub. The other thing I know is there are many businesses now that are now actively engaged in and understand the housing need in our region and want to contribute financial dollars to figuring out the solution. A foundation like ours, which isn't private sector, public sector, is perfectly positioned to be that hub, that connector, to leverage those resources, leverage the opportunities the state may have, federal government may have, and other larger entities and other larger foundations. And so we look to play that role. Happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Members, we'll go to questions. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Sertich, I will agree with you that your city is far better. It houses the greatest baseball player that never played a full inning of baseball and one of my favorite characters in one of my favorite movies ever. So sorry, Representative Lizegard, but he's right.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't going to ask for a vote on it, but the numbers seem to be moving in our order.
Yeah.
And actually, if I could take 30 seconds, that was my parents' doctor from school. He was the school doctor, and he always did a housing a hearing test. And back then, the hearing test was he whispered a number in the person's ear, and the first person who took the test would just whisper to the other kids, the number is 7 today. And so nobody had a hearing issue because they all knew the answer.
And Mr. Representative Nash. For those that don't know, the greatest movie ever is Field of Dreams, and the principal character, or one of them, is Archibald Moonlight Graham, who played for New York baseball team and got a half an inning of baseball under his belt, never got to bat, and is perhaps the most touching character in both the book, Shoeless Joe Comes to Iowa, and the movie Field of Dreams. So, thanks.
You never know where we're going to head in housing committee, but Field of Dreams is a good one. So,
baseball anywhere.
Other Representative Johnson?
Chair Howard, Representative Listlegard. There's a lot of challenges all across the state, especially in workforce housing. I've been up in that area talking to city council members, county board members, and workforce housing is a huge issue. There's jobs, but no place for them to live. I'm just wondering, Mr. Sertich, with your, you say you want to leverage everything else that's going on up there, getting state grant dollars, to do that leveraging. I'm just wondering how much housing you've actually done, because I just got done going through your current annual report.
Mr. Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. We have not done any direct housing, and I don't see that as being our particular role. Our role, we've granted dollars to organizations that do housing, especially around workforce and low-income housing, and so we're more the grant maker of that. But the role that we would play is this convener, where we would bring all the parties to the table to figure out what the solutions are for the community. And I think that's truly what the missing piece is. It's not necessarily that we would be the developer or we would be the doer. We would get all of the right resources to the table.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Lifsgard, I'm just going through your bill here, and I'm just wondering what the percentage for administrative costs would be used for that.
Representative Lisligard?
Or is the $2 million the administrative cost to associate all these grants and put all the pieces together?
Mr. Chair, I will defer to Tony Sertich, the CEO.
Mr. Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. We're open to having a discussion on what that dollar amount is, but we do see that this seeds this fund, which is both the person power and starting to raise capital for this, and happy to have a discussion with you and the chair if this were to move forward on, if you want to be specific about that, we can get into those details. Happy to do that.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah.
Any other discussion? If not, I just want to thank Representative Lisligard. We've had some version of this conversation about how to address the needs of these communities that don't have the staff or wherewithal for years, and it feels like we now, basically every year we've had that conversation, and this is a bill that targets that issue. So I thank you for bringing it forward. I'll go to you for any final comments on the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Yeah, and we have. And so I just keep going back to, you know, I believe it was $47,000 when I was a part of that. And that that piece of land is still sitting there because we did not know how to move forward. We did not know how to bring different entities and developers in there. So we did the best that we could, and it's just sitting there. And that is over a decade ago. And so having a coordinated effort to bring everybody together and bring those resources and those tools and that toolbox to help these communities prepare for the future, that's what we're trying to do, and I'd appreciate any support we can get. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I will renew the motion that House File 2344 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And with that, it's laid over. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, next we're going to go back to House File 2196 of Representative Igbaje. Vice Chair, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
With that, House Bill 2196 is before us. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Today, I'm presenting House File 2196 that will support the JAT Development Group as they continue to build housing across North Minneapolis. The Satori Village is a mixed-income and mixed-age housing project. The first housing project is a six-story building with 112 units, of which 80% will be available at market rate and the remaining 20% at an affordable rate. JAT Development is also building a smaller building with 26 units, of which 62% would be at market rate, and then the remainder affordable. They also have a third project that would focus on senior living. So this is an opportunity for the state to engage in a public-private partnership to build more housing in communities that are saturated in low-income affordable housing units. While these types of housing are good, there is emerging benefits for mixed-income neighborhoods that include a balance between market rate and affordable housing. In such neighborhoods, there can be increased maintenance of the properties, leading to less stress for the residents, and sometimes increased social interactions from people in different economic class positions. The goal is that this will lead to more social networking between residents and third spaces like parks, stores, schools, to increase engagement in the community. Building housing is important, as we've all talked about. And while we do it, it is important to ensure that the communities we're creating do not exacerbate the separation of communities based on economic status. By bringing people together, we can ensure that all people have a chance to live in safe and healthy neighborhoods with opportunities to allow them to thrive. And so I now like to turn to my testifier, Ms. Doris.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today. My name is Doris Baylor, and I am a resident of Minneapolis. Specifically, I live in North Minneapolis. I came to town to work at Deluxe Corporation, worked there for many years, and I've always lived in the city, so I've always kind of had a reverse commute, but I think a deep appreciation of people from wherever their walks of life are, because we truly are all humans and want to live in healthy communities. One of the things that we have been trying to do in North Minneapolis is to create balance. As many of you know, it is a neighborhood that if There's something going on. It seems to have more of it going on than other places. And I think a large part of that is because of the silos that are created based on people's income and their comfort level. And so what we wanted to do is what we're calling a village, because we truly believe that everyone who wants to live in the community should have an opportunity and should have the choice of quality housing. Some of our houses are older, and we have residents who don't want to leave the community but really are not able to keep their homes up. And so we were looking at a way that we could include not only young people, but we would also have some of our seniors stay in the community because of their sage wisdom, their free time, and their love of the community, because those things oftentimes are lost when a community is totally changed by whatever development comes in. One of the things I think that makes us unique is not only have we lived in Minneapolis our entire time living here, which is over 40-some years. Both my kids are products of the Minneapolis Public Schools, and I deeply care about our community and want it not to be viewed as a place where we've got problems to solve, but as a rich place with people from all walks of life, and as a community that thrives because we have businesses, we have residents, we have life there. And so that is why we not only are doing this project to provide housing, but also more energy and positive outcomes for our community. I would like to tell you about the senior housing. The senior housing is going to be 78 units. It's a five-story building, so those who want to continue to walk can. It's not huge, so if you are a person who may be interested in having exercise as a very, very much a part of everything you do, you can walk up to your unit. We're going to have studios. We're going to have one- and two-bedroom units. The other thing that we're going to have that's really so badly needed in our community is a fitness room. I worked for the YMCA for many years, and we had the pleasure of being a part of the Minneapolis Public Housing before the pandemic. And that was such a great opportunity because people who had never maybe had time in their lives to be physically fit had a place to come and gather and talk to each other. And we found that we were bringing people together who had like interests and common goals, but also were from the community, and some of them were from the outlying suburban area. But one of the things we had that they all loved was free parking. And so I was an instructor there and worked in the community and really enjoyed it greatly. When you go there now, there's such a gap. It's such a desert. It's such sadness because we no longer can be in that space. And we had some adults who were part of the Augustana, but it's kind of daycare for older adults with Alzheimer's or other other conditions that made it necessary for them to be in the care of others during the day so their family members could work. So I have a real heart around seniors because I do believe that whether you're retired or you just are older, you still have value and you still want to stay healthy, but you also want to be comfortable in the space that you're working in because you aren't as strong as you used to be and you just don't want to have that issue. And it just enriches their lives so much, and it brings so much personal satisfaction to be healthy. And so I think this fitness center is very critical because it really is a desert. There is no other place for older adults to work out in our space now. We have a youth and teen enrichment center down the street with the YMCA, which is fantastic. And so I'm really excited about this because I think the older adults living in this building, the seniors, will really benefit from it greatly. We're also going to have a courtyard, so sometimes you just want to get outside and have fresh air. And it's going to be so wonderful that they can do that. They can do gardening. They'll be right there in their own neighborhood, so to speak. But the beautiful thing is they don't have to shovel snow. They don't have to rake. They don't have to do all the other things that people tend to have to do when you have your own home, a single family home. But they will have a community right there in the city, right there on Broadway, right near the grocery store, not very far from restaurants, near churches. It's going to be a hub that's very beneficial for all of us. The other item is going to be a library. We believe very strongly that an enriched mind creates a kind voice and very unique experiences. And so often older adults are not going to the public library because it may require a bus ride or a car or may not be easily accessible for them. We're going to create a library that they indeed will have the beautiful option of bringing in books and things that they're interested in and sharing those, but also will have the state-of-the-art computers and things that will enrich their lives as well. So I'm very excited about it. As you shared, we've got three phases. The first phase is in progress right now, and that's called the kind of a boutique, where we're trying to encourage professionals from our community to stay in the community to help us grow into a more balanced and safer and, in all honesty, a richer community. And then we're going to have the seniors, and then we're going to have a smaller unit where we're thinking it will attract probably more maybe families with one or two members. But it's each one of them is going to be different, but they're all going to be very close to each other so that we truly are creating a community of health. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Vanetta Parker.
There she is. I'll trade places.
Good afternoon. Everyone.
Welcome to the committee.
I'm sorry?
I said welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My sister definitely covered most of it. I am excited and very honored to be a part of this project. I am not from the Minneapolis area. I came here 6 years ago when Tim Baylor, who's her husband, the owner of the business, first presented this project to me. I was very excited and put away everything I had and flew to Minneapolis, and I've been here about 6 years. So really excited about what this new product, and I call it new product because there's nothing similar to it in North Minneapolis. So I'm really excited to see how it's going to change the dynamics of the community. The people are excited. Because again, it is different, it is new, and I think the village has managed to capture everything that we wanted to do, from seniors to young adults and also middle age. So we are, all guns ahead, fast forward. She talked about the boutique, which is under construction now. My background is construction. I have over 30 years of experience from the Washington, D.C. area. And again, I came here specifically for this project. I am just to see how it is changing the dynamics of North Minneapolis in terms of, again, it's offering everything. Commercial space will be on the first floor of the phase one, which is the boutique. So we're excited about that retail space. The other buildings will not have that, but as well, they will be the fitness centers, the library, all of the things she's already talked about. So I think it's going to be exciting. I think it's going to be great, and just excited to see it all come together. It's taken us 6 years. We've been at it like crazy. First couple of years was just, in the weeds. And so now to see it all coming full circle is just a joy to see.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on the bill? If not, we can go to member questions. Are there member questions? Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Badgey. I think this project is a good project. Sounds real good.
Thank you.
The question I have is, my understanding it's a $60 million project going up, or if not more.
That's probably. Yeah,
I'm so sorry. But this project already has acquired USDA HUD financing. It's already, believe it's already obtained funding from the state as well, I believe. Local investments, local incentive support corporations. It's applied for a tax increment financing from the city of Minneapolis and transit orientated development backing from Hennepin County. Out of a $660 million project, $800,000 is not much. We have a lot of projects going across the state. I think we're at Representative Nash might have the exact number, but I think we're somewhere north of $4 billion in requests, and we have a budget target of $1 billion. I think this is a project that would work, but I'm just wondering what if Representative Abadie can tell me what the $800,000 is to be used for.
Vice Chair Abadie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if either Ms. Parker or Ms. Baylor could answer that question, that would be...
Ms. Parker?
Primarily the pre-development costs that are associated with, the, you know, the construction, the all of the engineering, architectural, all, you know, some of the borings and the typical pre-development costs that, you know, run, it's consultants, things like that, engineering, those type of expenses, pre-development.
Representative Johnson?
Okay, just wanted to get it on the record what this is for.
Other questions? If not, I want to thank our testifiers. I want to go to Representative Igbaje for any closing comments on the bill.
Thank you, committee. Thank you for listening. And as we work to put the budget together, we'll see. I hope I can look forward to your support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. With that, I'll renew Vice Chair Igbaje's motion that House File 2196 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And with that, it's laid over. Next, we're going to hear House File 2585, Representative Hassan's bill, and I believe Representative Noor is going to present. It's an issue I know that he's worked on closely with Representative Hassan over a number of years. And look forward to hearing the bill. So I'll start off by just making the motion that House File 2585 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And we'll go to Representative Noor to present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. And thanks to Chair Hassan for introducing this bill. Members, this bill makes the dream of homeownership attainable, especially for those who are first-time home buyers, first-generation home buyers, who have been completely been locked out from homeownership. As you are looking at the data that you just received, it clearly indicates where the gaps are. Black Minnesotans have been significantly been impacted when it comes to home ownership, and particularly for those who are new immigrants have been left out from the generational wealth building. What this bill is doing is to provide and establish a program that will offer that opportunity for those who have been left out. In my own district, more than 90% of the people are home renters. In my own district, we have the lowest in terms of the federal poverty guidelines. There's a reasoning, there are so many reasons behind it, and there's so many causes behind it. But what this bill is about today is to provide and establish a program that is administered by the NeighborWorks Home to offer that opportunity for those who want to buy a home based on the conditions set in the bill. Members, this is for home buyers who are within or below 130% federal poverty, AMI, I mean, who are unable to go through regular mechanism to buy a home. And we're also looking at those who are within the 60% of home owners within the census tracts as indicated in the bill. Mr. Chen, members, I've talked to many folks. And when you talk to members within your district and many places who have not been given this opportunity, it seems to be we are not addressing the needs of the entire state. What this is, a fee-based program through down payment, another system program that the NeighborWorks Home Partners have already established in some sense. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask my testifier to go over the bill.
Thank you. We'll go to Mr. Peters. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Good afternoon, all. My name is Jason Peterson, Executive Director with NeighborWorks Home Partners. We are a nonprofit CDFI community lender who has been helping Minnesota families buy, fix, and keep their homes for over 40 years now. Each year, we support approximately 1,000 families through their home ownership journey. Neighborhoods Home Partners, we are one of the primary nonprofit down payment assistance lenders here in the Twin Cities. Over the last 7 years alone, we've provided 1,375 down payment assistance loans. That's helped 1,375 families become homeowners. We've seen the need for the down payment assistance programs grow substantially over the last several years. This is due to a number of reasons, including the limited housing inventory, higher mortgage interest rates, which sound like they'll be going up again after the Fed increased the rate today, and the fact that many of the families we support have not seen their incomes keep pace with inflation. These factors have pushed the dream of homeownership out of reach for too many of our fellow Minnesotans. As you all know, a major challenge we're facing is the lack of housing inventory. I would strongly encourage investments to support an increase in homeownership production in this session, as this is sorely needed for a healthy housing ecosystem. That being said, we have not seen a slowdown in demand for our down payment assistance as families continue to find homes to purchase, with down payment assistance being key. The biggest challenge we see right now is the down payment assistance funds. While the housing inventory has been a challenge, the increase in interest rates has really limited the buying ability and the potential options a family can afford. Given this large need in the community, we currently help families layer several sources of funds to try to get the down payment necessary to purchase a home. This can become very challenging, and oftentimes there is insufficient funding to do this. This program that's presented today will provide the sufficient funds to help up to 200 families purchase a home. In the past, we have piloted the same exact program on a smaller scale with good success. In the initial phase, we helped 16 families buy a home who utilized an interest-free, fee-based first mortgage. This program today is important as it provides a deeper level of affordability to help families achieve their dream of homeownership for a community that has been underserved. And I know that some more information was passed out on this, but as you can see from this information, there's a rather large disparity gap between who owns and does not own a home. Through this program, we anticipate helping approximately 200 families who utilize interest-free, fee-based first mortgage products. The program would be limited to first-time home buyers under the 130% AMI, as Representative Knorr presented, who currently live in majority rental census tracts. Our role within this program would be to administer this loan program. This would include loan origination and loan servicing, as well as overall administration of the program. We've recently built our capacity and are prepared to administer a program of this size. Just in the last 2 years alone, we have provided 550 down payment loans. One concern that I've heard that's raised about down payment programs is there is insufficient housing inventory. From our experience, so the question is, will the down payment programs support folks that are able to find homes? In our experience, the answer is yes, there is sufficient inventory. Of those 550 families we've helped in the last 2 years, the average purchase price is $239,448. The average income for these families is $56,355. As the wealth gap continues to increase all across Minnesota, it has become very apparent who is and is not able to purchase a home. As homeownership is the single biggest wealth generator, and the best way to end generational poverty, it is important that we support families to achieve this goal. DPA programs are a critical resource to support this work, and I would urge you to support down payment programs through this year's budget, as this is not just a one-time investment, but rather a life-changing investment for families to benefit for generations to come.
Thank you. With that, we will go to member discussion. Members, let's see, who do we have? Rosa Datsa.
Thank you, Chair Howard. A question I've got is, I noticed that you require that they must have $1,000 of their own funds for a down payment. Is there conditions of where those funds come from? Would it be from, can the seller contribute that, or is that coming from family members? What does that look like?
Representative Knorr, Mr. Peterson.
So the requirement of that would be from the borrower themselves.
From the borrower themselves. Another question would be is occupancy. Once they acquire the property, is there a timeline that they must occupy that home as their primary homestead?
Yes, so there will be an ongoing occupancy requirement. There will be a forgivable nature to this program. If the property is not their primary residency, any portion that is not forgiven would become due.
What kind of timeline are we looking at for that right now?
Mr. Peterson.
Yep. Right now we're looking at a five-year time horizon for that.
Five-year timeline. Thank you.
Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Howard. To testify, just to follow up on that, so there's a prepayment penalty, right? If you sell your house before the 5 years, is a penalty?
Mr. Peterson.
I would not call it a prepayment penalty, but it forgives incrementally, and so there would not be a penalty attached to, but a portion, the portion that is not forgiven would become due, yes.
Representative Cha.
And that is within a five-year period. Right.
And then funds from that would then be, funds received would then be recycled and continued, would be provided to additional borrowers to fund additional folks to purchase homes.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, and to the testifier, and Representative Knorr, I like the concept of this bill. It does help. But I also like the fact that you require educational courses dealing with prior to signing the purchase, what's involved. You have to come up with some of their own money, $1,000. And that the buyer must occupy the residence. But what I'm scratching up my head at is why the buyer must complete a landlord education course. If it's for first-time home buyers and they have to live in it, I'm just wondering why they have to go through a landlord course.
Representative Knorr or Mr. Peterson.
Yes, thank you. So to clarify, this program would be eligible for, the eligible properties would be 1 to 4 units. And so if they were to purchase a 2 to 4 unit multifamily, they would be required to do landlord education. If they purchased a 1 unit single family home, there would be no landlord education requirement.
Representative Johnson.
To the testifier. So if they bought a fourplex, they would be required to live in one of the units. And if they did not, then the loan would be called immediately.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Any other members? Representative Hussein.
Mr. Knorr, Representative Knorr, thank you for bringing this bill forward. We do have a housing crisis in Minnesota, and this will help many of community that needs for those housings. And Jason, thanks for working on this, Knorr and Representative Hassan and myself for a couple years now, and this will address and help a lot of people that really, really needs for housing in Minnesota. Thank you.
I'll go to Representative Knorr for any closing comments, but want to thank you and thank Representative Hassan for work. This is another issue that I know has been discussed about how do we get at this challenge in our communities for years. I used to represent the community at Dar al-Farouk after redistricting last time, but participated in a housing forum there just a few weeks ago and heard person after person talk about, you know, this sort of challenge for their community and the desire for more opportunities to enter home ownership. And we also heard a lot about sort of the predatory practice of contract for deeds, an issue that I think we need to take even a closer look at next session as well. But I just really appreciate the work to bring a proposal that responds to a challenge we've heard from our community for years. And so I'll go to Representative Knorr for any closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is a good bill. I hope you'll include it in your omnibus bill. So thank you so much, members.
Thank you. And with that, the bill is laid over for possible inclusion. Next.
What do we have next?
2704, Representative Perez Vega.
All right. Getting all out of order.
We'll try this mic today.
Representative Perez Vega, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'd like to move HF 2704.
It is properly before the committee. Please present your bill.
Awesome. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm here to talk in regards to supporting HF 2704, tenants' right to organize from Red Lake down to Red Ring, regardless of age, race, or income. We believe that every Minnesotan deserves a safe and affordable place to call home. We know our state is stronger when family, children, and workers can put down roots in the barrios, the neighborhoods they call home. But housing stability is still a far away dream for many of the 620,000 renters households in Minnesota who all too often are exploited by their landlords. Since 2008, in line with trends across the country, Minnesota's rental housing market has experienced increased speculation by national investors. Tenants are increasingly likely to deal with an out-of-state corporation as their landlord, and their ability to request timely repairs, negotiate rent adjustments, and ultimately engage on equal terms has diminished. The disparity in this power is clear. Landlords have more time, resource, and lobbyists than renters. So how do we fix this imbalance? This is what we present today with HF 2704, a way to fix this imbalance. And with that, I'd like our testimonies to further along to address why the importance of 2704 should be law.
Thank you, Representative. Our first testifier is Sadia Omar with the New American Development Center. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, and thank you, Chair Howard, Vice Chair Gabachi, and members of the Housing Committee. My name is Sadia Omar with New American Development Center, a nonprofit organization working with East African communities and a member of Equity in Place. I'm here today to express our strong support of House File 2704. The tenant right to organize. We believe that tenants should have the right to organize without fear of retaliation from the landlords. Organizing gives tenants a stronger voice and the ability to advocate more effectively for their rights and interests. However, tenants who are afraid of retaliation may be hesitant to organize. There is some landlords that might use various tactics to intimidate or retaliate against tenants who are non-English speakers, such as not writing notes in language that they can read and understand, charging them surprising fees like for maintenance and after move-out, training evictions or withholding maintenance. When tenants are afraid to speak out, the collective power is diminished and their ability to effective change is limited. Therefore, we believe it's essential to support House File 2704 to provide legal protection for tenants to organize freely. Additionally, tenants organizers might seek support from community groups like nonprofit organizations, legal advocates, or anybody who can have more resources and experience to support them so their voices can be heard. Thank you for your time and consideration. We look forward to seeing HF 2704 advance and for tenants in Minnesota to have more equity housing system that will allow us to continue to move forward in protecting Minnesotans, tenant Minnesotans.
Thank you. Next, we have Catherine Banbury with Homeline. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. And thank you, Chair Howard, Vice Chair Agbaji, and members of the Housing Committee. My name is Catherine Banbury. I have been a tenant in St. Paul for decades. I also am a tenant organizer for Homeline and a member of Equity in Place. I want to thank Representative Perez Vega for championing HF 2704, and I'm speaking in support of this bill. Many of my neighbors are elders, some are disabled, and all are on limited or fixed income. Over the years, I have listened to my neighbors' desperation and anguish at trying and failing to negotiate rent increases on their own that in some cases have ended in eviction and/or being economically displaced with nowhere to go. After working for a few years as a volunteer tenant leader in my building and supporting other similar buildings in the metro area alongside my busy small business, this constant despair that I heard from my neighbors is what propelled my decision to become a full-time tenant organizer with Homeline. Many problems tenants face cannot be addressed through an individual communicating with their landlord or asserting their individual legal rights. Often these issues can be resolved through collective action. Tenants working together to assert their rights, and tenant associations are a vehicle for this collective action. Initially, essentially it's a lot harder to ignore or dismiss or retaliate against a large group of people all expressing the same concerns than just one person on their own. Passing the right to organize would remove potential retribution threats from management, making forming a tenant association less threatening to folks. HomeLine has provided support to tenants facing retaliation for asserting their rights, and in some cases even experienced the intimidation firsthand. In 2022, our hotline received 485 calls related to retaliation and fears of it happening. In my building, we began meeting as a way to affect positive change in our shared home. We started a community garden. We partnered with the county to begin a compost and recycling program. We scheduled regular neighborly meetups, among other activities. All these programs helped build our base by boosting morale to be able to tackle the more challenging problems like unsustainable rent hikes. Nevertheless, there are a score of neighbors in my building who are afraid to join our tenant association because of management retaliation. A right to organize would support a robust, diverse community of closely connected tenants acting as allies. Tenants are then better positioned to win future campaigns, take more initiative, and have greater capacity to build more power. HF 2704 provides a tenant empowerment tool designed to ensure tenants can organize against unfair and illegal practices without fear that they will be wrongfully displaced. As a tenant, along with HomeLine and EIP, we urge you to vote yes on HF 2704. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you. Next, we have Juan Luis Rivera-Reyes with the Alliance for Metropolitan Stability. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, and thank you, Chair Howard and Vice Chair Gbadje and members of the committee. My name is Juan Luis Rivera-Reyes. I am a coalition organizer with the Alliance for Metropolitan Stability and also a member of Equity in Place, a housing coalition that functions in the state. I want to thank Representative Maria Perez Vega for championing House File 2704. And today I've come to you to speak on support and express the support for House File 2704. Because of the many reasons for it, but mainly because we recognize that renters in Minnesota are a major contributor to the well-being of our state, and that people need a stronger protections to be able to have stable and dignified housing. More specifically, we support tenants' right to organize a House File 2704 as a safeguard to the following currently unprotected organizing activities. Such as the use of common spaces or meeting facilities to organize, as we recognize the deep institutional and systemic disadvantages that tenants face when trying to assert their rights as a collective. We understand how important it is to be able to use common spaces and understand how diminishing it is when tenants are prevented from using common spaces to be able to even establish the basics of getting to know one another and their neighbors in the same housing complex. We are also supportive of the privacy tenants need to meet without representatives or employees of the ownership or management company present in these meetings. We have seen massive increases in evictions in many cases that seem to be a pattern of mass displacement of current residents in order to offer units at a higher rate to newer tenants. We also have seen a lack of repairs or maintenance of common spaces and more intimidation of non-English speaking residents and tenants in the last year, especially with the ongoing effects of the COVID-19 pandemic and since the end of Rent Help MN and the end of the eviction moratorium protections. We know how important timing is for tenants and how important it is for them to be able to connect with each other and be able to distribute communications amongst themselves to help prevent their neighbors from being displaced. We know that tenants care to preserve their homes, and when situations arise, we'll act timely in order to notify, you know, the relevant staff or management of issues affecting their housing complexes or their individual units. So within that, we understand how important it is for tenants to feel the safety of being able to engage with each other without having the fear of having a representative of management or ownership present in the room that could potentially lead to fear of retaliation or actual retaliation, or engaging in what should be pretty basic connections with each other. Finally, we also support the rights to tenants to receive organizing assistance from non-resident tenant advocates. It is incredibly important that community organizers, community staff, or community members outside of housing conflicts also have the ability to engage with their neighbors and assist them in advocating for themselves. The challenges and powers and balances that tenants face when trying to understand ever-growing lease contracts is in some cases comprising of 30 pages or more, really lead to tenants having to have a really comprehensive understanding of Minnesota's tenant-landlord laws, which in many cases is just not attainable, especially when timely manners require such short notices for tenants to rectify an issue that may be occurring. A 30-page rent increase or lease contract is not the most attainable to go through in a timely manner. So we recognize how important it is for them to be able to reach out to community members who can offer some more assistance in being able to navigate these complex contract agreements, but then even more importantly, to serve as a bridge for our non-English speaking tenants who, in many cases, receive notices in languages that are not their own, that have a time-sensitive response to them or have some type of formal communication that requires them to respond, and in many cases aren't able to get that correspondence translated to them properly unless they're able to connect with an English speaker who's able to translate that effectively for them. In some cases, this gap of time that occurs during these situations in some cases can result in penalties for these tenants, in some cases can lead to displacement and disillusion of their homes. So thank you again for your time and consideration. We look forward to seeing House File 2704 pass in advance through this committee, and look forward to be able to build truly sustainable and equitable homes for all Minnesotans.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on the bill? If not, we can go to, there is an A1 amendment. Who's offering the A1? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Perez-Vega, I agree with you that every resident deserves a safe place to call home. And this is modeled very much after the, and I'm going to butcher the last name, the Kari Koskinen Manager Background Check statute, which is found in 299C.67, that says that the manager has to go through a background check before they can be the manager of that property. And the amendment would ask that the person who is going to be assisting the residential tenants also submit to a background check, so that we can protect the residents, because we never know what has happened in someone's background. So hope that you will accept this amendment. It is offered in the line of protecting residents who are going to be contacted by potential organizers, and just make sure that they have been fully vetted and that any potential criminal background that may put their lives in danger or their safety in danger, that's been brought to light.
Representative Perez-Vega.
Yes, thank you. I guess let me ask this question, Representative Nash. Is this a background check for the tenant, the organizer, or the landlord?
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the landlord already has to do that under the Kari Koskinen manager background check. That is current statute 299C.67 subdivision 2. This would be a background check for the organizer who will be in the building and will be meeting with people. And we just want to make sure that they have gone through the same level of scrutiny that both the tenants and the managers have.
And I actually have a question for the author of the amendment as well. The language refers superintendent and has the meaning given in this section. Could you talk about what, so who is the superintendent that would be sort of performing this background check?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask House Legal Research to walk through what the superintendent definition is under 299C.67, because I did not write that bill, did not write that statute, and I'm just trying to do my level best in order to protect the residents of the places that people will be perhaps getting organized in.
Mr. Cope.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, in this instance, superintendent means the superintendent of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension.
Thank you. I'll go to Representative Perez Vega.
I believe that those contracts amongst those who are going to be doing the evaluation are already going through a background check through their employee. I don't see any reason why they would have to have a background check to protect these tenants.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, well, in as much as there is not certainty that the author just said that she believes that we don't have 100%, this would guarantee that they do and that they would go through the BCA. So with that, I'm going to request a roll call. And this is literally in the best thought to protect the people who are going to live in these apartment buildings. You know, the Koskinen Act requires that the manager goes through the background check. I think that anybody who is going to be given access to the building is going to be operating inside the building. We're going to similarly want them to be gone through a thorough background check. Statistically, you know, people have things in their past that may not always get brought to light before they go into places. That's why we have the Koskinen Act, and I think that it's exceptionally important that we do so. So appreciate the consideration of the A1, and I did ask for a roll call. Thank you.
Roll call. Having requested, there will be a roll call on the A1. Vice Chair Gbadje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to the amendment, I think I kind of understand what Representative Nash is trying to get to, but, you know, as Representative Perez Vega said, these organizers would be coming from institutions and organizations that already have to do these things when they're employing people. And so I think making people go through a secondary check and then also having fees collected from them when the organization has already paid for those fees. I mean, if you wanted to make the language to be more secure, I think there's a better way to write this, so then that way we're getting confirmation from the employers that they've done the appropriate background check for the organizers that they're sending. That's all I have.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Nash, thank you for this amendment. This amendment is the right thing to do. Employers are not required to do background checks. They usually do them, but they're not required to. The only thing they're required to do is make sure they're a citizen of the United States, because if they get caught hiring a undocumented person, it can be up to, I believe it's a $10,000 fine, and the person has to be terminated immediately. That's under federal law. But by doing the background checks and requiring them, we're making sure that people that have access to the building, and when they have access to the building, they're having access to our children, to make sure our children are safe. So I think it's a good thing, and thank you again, Representative Nash.
I'll go to Representative Nash, the maker of the motion.
I'm going to move that we adopt the A1. I have requested a roll call. And once again, this is to do exactly what I have said, what Representative Johnson just said, to make sure that anyone who has access to a building has undergone a thorough background check, whether it be from their employer or this. I think it is unbelievably important that we make sure that if someone's going to have access to people who live in a building, that we know that they are not a threat to the people who live there.
Representative Hussein, yes, you hopped on the list.
I just have a clear clarifications. Those people that are doing a tenant association, they are living in the building, right? And if they're living in the building, they file up applications, they already went through background check, and they have everything. So those people are organizing. They're already living in the house, and they already went through with the tenant, and their background has been checked. No one is coming outside to organize for them. It's the people that are organizing within their tenant that are living in that building, and I can have House Reese double-check on that one. I mean, I'm confused, you know, what we're asking here. Is why do we have to go have them go through another background check with these individuals that live in, because I used to live in the public housing. I used to live in an apartment that does organize this kind of thing, but I'm already going through because I'm living in the building, and I had a background check. So all I'm doing is just organizing and make sure that I fight for my rights. So I'm confused here.
I see Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Representative Hussein, completely agree with you. That's why in the if you look at line 1.19, it talks current resident tenants are not subject to this subdivision. I think the premise of this is, you know, when I was renting 2 years ago, you see the sign on the door that says, don't let anybody in behind you. They need to use their own key card to get in. So I think, to me, this seems like a reasonable amendment to make sure that as people are coming, going for certain situations, that we're protecting the residents in these situations.
Representative Johnson.
There again, I'm Chair Howard to go to in response to line 1.19, tenant organizer definition means a tenant or another who assists residential's tenants in establishing and operating and is not an employee or representative of the current or proposed landlord, property owner, or management. This is a completely different person that can come in and do this. Doesn't have to live there. It could be a community organizer. It could be somebody's friend that's going door-to-door to every apartment. Does not have to be a tenant in that building to be doing this. So I think it's very important to get this amendment done for the safety of the kids.
I will go to Representative Nash. She's the maker of the motion.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be done, and then we can go to the vote. But that is the crux of this, is that in your own bill, in line 1.19, it says tenant organizer means a tenant or another who assists residential tenants. So that's clearly that it's creating an exception to the person who lives there as a potential person who may show up. That's what drove me to do this, to make sure that when I read that in the bill, that person who, or another who assists, is somebody who goes through a background check. This is not a gotcha amendment, folks. This is me saying, if this becomes law, that the person who is, by the own definition, a tenant organizer means a tenant or another who assists, that another who assists, we know what's happened and what's going on, and that we're not putting our residents at risk. You can vote it down, but what it says in voting it down is that you're not really all that interested in protecting the people who live there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll go to Representative Perez Vega. I think Representative Baggio makes a good point that there might be a better way to get at this, but I'll go to Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Chairman. I think when I've lived in apartments before where they've had facilities or party rooms, so to say, right, recreation rooms and gyms. And in my lease would state that you could invite a guest to be with you. And it looks to me that they never questioned whether that person needed a background check to use the pool as my guest or the recreation room. So when we're looking at folks that are coming to assist from organizations specifically that are trying to do translation services or who may be of a better communicator, especially when we think about folks with disabilities that are renting or folks who don't speak English, I don't see that any different from them being able to have accessibility to their recreational services as a guest than as somebody there to offer expertise on tenant rights.
Mr. Abdullahi, please take the roll.
Chair Howard.
Chair votes no.
Chair Howard, nay. Vice Chair Gbadje.
No.
Vice Chair Gbadje, nay. Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Chaw.
No.
Representative Chaw, nay. Representative Dotsev.
Yes.
Representative Dotsev, aye. Representative Hassan, excuse. Representative Hussein.
No.
Representative Hussein, nay. Representative Kozlowski.
No.
Representative Kozlowski, nay. Representative Myers.
Aye.
Representative Myers, aye. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nash, aye. Representative Norris.
No.
Norris, nay. Representative Perez Vega. Representative Perez Vega, nay. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Representative Petersburg, aye. Chair, that concludes roll call with 5 ayes and 7 nays.
The amendment is not adopted. We are on to discussion to the bill. Representative Hussein?
Representative Perez Vega, thank you for bringing this wonderful bill forward, because I had this experience. And when And I'm getting calls, you know, within my community and the people that I represent on my district. It's happening to everybody. They cannot organize. They feel in fear. This will protect them, will help them to organize and to do and organize and advocate what's the right for the tenant. And I appreciate it for this bill, for bringing it forward, and I hope we can all support this good cause bill.
Any further discussion? If not, we'll go to Representative Perez Vega for any final comments.
Thank you, Chairman Howard. You know, this is a bill that's going to provide communication between landlord and tenants in a positive, productive way, not a retaliation or a fight against, but more on what justice looks like in housing rights, and that all folks have the ability to feel that they are communicating with their landlords, and that landlords have access to those organizing to be able to be clear about what the statutes and housing rights are here in the state of Minnesota. This is a great opportunity for folks that may have cultural differences, language barriers, for certain disabilities in which they don't have accessibility to getting the clear answers of what their rights are. So I'm very grateful for our testifiers here, and thank you for members of this committee, and I look forward to getting your support on making this law. Gracias.
With that, the bill is laid over. Thank you very much. Next, I'll hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Budge.
As the chair's getting settled, I'll just start by saying House File 302 has actually been heard in this committee before. So as members may remember, we unfortunately ran out of time at that hearing and so needed to cut short the question time. So what we'll do now is we'll take some time to ensure that members get their additional questions on House File 302 asked. So maybe we'll take about another 10 minutes or so. As we're doing that, I also want to note that the language that's in House File 302 is also reiterated in House File 1667, which is going to be the next bill on the agenda. So I think at this time we'll probably take questions on both of them together. And so then after we are done moving House File 302, we'll then move House File 1667. So with that, I'll move to member discussion unless you have any additional opening remarks, Chair Howard.
Chair Budger, I'll just briefly refresh memories. This is the Housing Infrastructure Bonds Bill that we heard jointly in the Capital Investment Committee, and then very briefly had a discussion, but not much time for member discussion, that would invest significant resources into housing infrastructure bonds and also make a few policy-based changes related to housing infrastructure bonds. And want to properly hear the bill and lay it over as we make sort of our decisions about how to move forward with another.
All right, so we'll move that this bill will be laid over, and then with that, we'll just turn to member discussion. Representative Johnson.
Chair Abadji, Chair Howard, there's a lot of things in this bill, but only one thing I'm concerned about is on line 1.18. I'm just wondering if you've been able to find, I asked a couple times now once, sent an email, and once we've asked in committee to what the current debt level of the aggregate principal of bonds and notes that are outstanding currently by Minnesota Housing Finance. I have not received that information. I'm just wondering if you happen to know what that is.
Chair Howard.
Chair Gbaje, Representative Johnson, I do not have that at hand, but I will follow up and make sure that we get that information.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Abadji, Representative Howard, I appreciate that because we do have a debt ceiling, which is the aggregate principal, which means general obligation bonds, housing finance bonds, and any loans that we have out there. And that debt ceiling is $5 billion. By just placing it to general obligation bonds, that seriously changes the amount of debt Minnesota Housing Finance could provide. It mean, basically mean if it wasn't for not counting general obligations bonds, which could go up to $5 billion by this bill, but with loans and housing finance bonds, there is no debt ceiling. And I'm concerned just the way this is written, there is no debt ceiling for Minnesota Housing Finance and how much they could spend. They could put $1 trillion out there, and this body would never know. That's why we have a debt ceiling. I believe this bill is going to be laid over at this time. But as long as that is in there, even though we don't know, and we might be a long ways from that debt ceiling, but we need to have a debt limit on them. Otherwise, this body is not doing their duties. This body is the only one that can do appropriations. And if you look at the bills in the past, we've told them, housing finance, how much they can spend in each category. But with this bill, that takes that authorization away from this body and gives it directly to them. So I do ask that you reconsider that, at least that portion of it, because I think we have to watch over and not let any agency's department run amok. So thank you.
Chair Howard.
I'll just reiterate, want to get that information and continue to have that discussion and make sure we get that information before we proceed with this proposal.
Further member discussion? All right, seeing none, I will motion that House File 302 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, and this bill is laid over. Chair Howard, I will now move that the next bill on our agenda, House File 1667, be referred to the General Register. Members, this is also going to be a vehicle bill, and so I will just see. We don't have any testifiers, do we? No. Okay. So I will see that if there's any member discussion, or Chair Howard, if you want to say anything before we start.
No, Chair, you summed it up well, that we're just sort of parking this to have options in terms of moving bills forward later in the session.
All right. Any other member discussion? All right. Seeing none, I will once again move that the House File 1667 be re-referred to the General Register, and I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. With that, motion passes, and the bill, House File 1667, is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Chair Howard.
Taking it easy on me. Next, we have House File 1311, Representative Norris. And as Representative Norris goes up, just a little context for this bill as well. This deals with a workforce housing project. We've heard a version of this in the governor's budget and very much is in discussions for inclusion in an omnibus bill, but we are pursuing a DE amendment that Representative Norris can speak to. So Representative Norris, let me make sure. First, I believe that you have an A1 amendment to the DE1.
That is correct, Chair Howard. The A1 amendment provides the same grace period that is included in the DE1 for the Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund and also applies that to the Housing Trust Fund.
Any questions to the A1? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the A1 to the DE1 is adopted, and I'll now move the DE1 as amended to amend House File 1311 and to the DE1, Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Howard. The DE1 is pretty simple and straightforward. In 2007, Minnesota created the Manufactured Housing Relocation Trust Fund to provide participating manufactured homeowners compensation in the event that all or part of their manufactured home park closes. The fund is currently administered by MMB. This bill would switch the administration to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. The DE1 also requires MMB to notify payees into the fund of the switch, and it shifts MMB's annual reporting obligations to the MHFA.
And we do have a testifier, Mark Bruner, with the Manufactured and Modular Home Association. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Bruner, Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota. The MMHA speaks for the nearly 1,000 privately owned manufactured home communities in the state of Minnesota. We have about 50,000 home sites that we oversee, and we also represent the plants that build manufactured and modular homes. Essentially, the bill as amended seems to be a logical sort of progression of the program in that, today anyway, Housing Finance administers several programs related to manufactured housing. We work with them constantly, and we have worked with MMB since the program was first administered, and helping develop letters and reaching out to owners to pay the fee. So it's our members that are responsible for collecting the $15 annual fee, and we think the process will work smoothly with Housing Finance. As a matter of fact, on Monday next week, we're co-hosting a webinar for Rent Help MN with the agency to encourage residents and homeowners to apply for assistance when there's a delinquency on lot rent or a mortgage payment on a home in a community. So we think this is a good area. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? If not, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, I'm a little frustrated and disappointed in this DE amendment. I know that it's a good amendment. It's not something we should probably do. But the frustrating part is, as a co-author of the amendment, or of the bill, it is the only bill, and deadlines are coming up, that adds money to workforce housing. It had $20 million additional money for workforce housing. As I go across the state and talk across different cities, counties, all across the state, except for the metro area, everyone is screaming for workforce housing. In fact, former Representative Dan Fabian, now Mayor Fabian, from Rosa, was down here speaking on that very issue. And because the importance of workforce housing, that's why I was on the bill. I heard rumors of another workforce housing bill coming that's supposed to be being worked on. But I'm still waiting for bills to be not just jacketed, but be finished written from a month ago. And if I'm waiting for a month already for a bill, deadlines are less than a month away. It's 2 weeks, February. We're running out of time. Now, this could have been added to a DE amendment to any other bill. Representative Norris, you have multiple modular or mobile home bills, mobile home park bills that this could have been added on to. But instead, it's the only bill that has financing for workforce housing. Basically, I'm going to have to apologize for the language, but it's giving the finger to Greater Minnesota.
Representative Johnson, come on.
I said I have to apologize for it, but that's what it's doing. I spent 2 hours in Aiken County on Friday driving through that slush and snow, and my car had 500 pounds of ice on it by the time I got there, discussing workforce housing and how they can get workforce housing. So I'm disappointed. I'm debating asking a roll call or not. I'm not sure if I will or not yet. But it, like I say, it's disappointing. I'm hoping that there will be a bill ready in time that meets deadline. It's one of the greatest things, the most important thing there is out there all across the state is workforce housing. Last Thursday when I checked, there was over 214,000 jobs available, with 70% of them full-time jobs. And when I talk to people in my community across the state, the issue is there's no place for somebody to move to take the job. We need workforce housing. I know this DE is going on, so I will not ask for a roll call. But it is a little frustrating with what this DE is doing. Even though it is a good bill, it needs to be done. I just wish it was done on a different bill.
Before we go to Representative Norris, I will just a few things. One, again, we did hear this exact funding in the governor's bill, and next week we'll see an omnibus bill that we haven't put up together's numbers. We need to do our work, but I think it's reasonable to expect that you'll see funding for this program in that bill. I will say that we have heard multiple bills that would help address workforce housing as well. And just to be candid, this request did come late, and we've heard most of the bills that have been referred to the committee. That's the reason why we're using this House file. So just to dispel any sort of notion. I will very much welcome your support for an omnibus bill that has money for greater Minnesota workforce housing next week, Representative Johnson. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Representative Johnson. And just to further dispel any notion that the Representative Johnson may have created about my support for workforce housing, I've actually presented several bills before this committee that brought money for workforce housing. In one of the very first days of this committee, I shared a story about how I'm on the board of a church that's trying to do a workforce housing development project, and it has been delayed because of the lack of workforce housing funding provided by this legislature. So this was a proposal, as you said, Chair Howard, that came to us late from the agency. Everybody agrees it has merit. Most of my other bills, because I've been hustling, have been heard. This was a vehicle that we had available, and so we used it. So I'm looking forward to support for this particular provision in the DE, and I'm looking forward to robust funding for workforce housing in our omnibus bill, Chair Howard.
Hustling is a good description for Representative Norris. I think folks would agree. If there's not any other discussion, I will motion that we first, I will move that we adopt the DE1 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no.
No.
The DE1 is adopted. Representative Dotsett, did you have something?
Nope.
Nope, okay. Then I will motion that House File 1311 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And with that, the bill is laid over. And last but certainly not least, Representative Johnson, you're up. Representative Johnson, would you like to move your bill?
Where would you like to go? Just to lay over?
To lay over, yes.
I will move House File 2938 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
The bill is properly before us. Representative Johnson, to your bill.
This bill, I decided to put this together after hearing the University of Minnesota here dealing with rent issues. I've been either on judiciary or housing every year since I've been in this legislature, and every year we're dealing with rental issues around student housing at the University of Minnesota. So I decided to put together a task force because a lot of the issues that they bring forward, yes, they are issues for those students who are still learning right out of high school and don't understand and sometimes learning the hard way what the adult life is actually like. So what I did is I put together a task force. to look into the issues around student housing and, may, and possibly make up a separate chapter or a separate section just for student housing around our universities and our college. To give them an idea that, as an educational way to let them learn what it's like, what the real world is like. Now, myself, I've rented numerous things, and the things that they talk about, to me, that's common sense. Yes, you look and you inspect the apartment before you move in. You call the manager or the company that you're renting it from when you're moving out to make sure everything's okay when you leave. Called covering your backside. Now, what this does is has all the groups around the university, has three owners of rental units, one student that lives in the metropolitan county, one student living outside the metropolitan county, two members representative nonprofit organizations serving post-secondary students, a housing attorney, a member of the housing finance agency. Take a look at what's best and how to deal with the issues around student housing. And then to make sure that they get their work done, it has a report, and a deadline for them to do the things that they need to do. I see in your packet there's a letter from the University of Minnesota that was wondering why they weren't contacted. I put this together for this body, not for the university, but for this body, how we should think, what we should do to alleviate the issues and helping our students, helping the housing providers in that area, and putting things together so things go smoothly, not just for the students, but for the housing providers as well. With that, then I will be, if you have any questions.
Representative Johnson, do you have any testifiers?
I do not have any testifiers. This is my bill, what I think this body should do so we alleviate the issues around the university.
So we will go to member discussion. Are there members that have questions? Vice Chair Agbaje.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, Representative Johnson. This is definitely an interesting idea. I just had a couple of questions about the makeup of the task force, and particularly on the housing attorney. Do you know what type of housing attorney you would want to see on this task force?
Representative Johnson.
The housing attorney would be one that understands rental laws. We just thought somebody, an attorney that understands rental laws is what I want to get on there.
Vice Chair Budget.
Do you have any, because I see that you have a little bit of balance between property owners and students who are renting and organizations who are supporting students. I was wondering if you had any interest in having a little bit more balance between the types of attorneys, because there's some who practice on plaintiff side and some who practice on the defense side.
Rivers Johnson.
Balance is fine, because I want to make, my goal is so we don't have the students here every year changing things that affect rent all across the state.
Vice Chair Budget.
I think just the last question I would ask is, sometimes when we see these task force, there's usually a cost associated with them and setting them up and in ensuring that they meet on time and that they get their reports done on time and any staffing considerations to support the task force. Do you anticipate costs with this task force?
Representative Johnson.
In the past, the task force I've seen has always been absorbed by the agency because there isn't, it's just a little bit of time when the agency has to have somebody there just helping out. It's not a full board, so it's a little different. It's just a task force meeting to try to figure out what's the best way to go.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Johnson. I appreciate you answering the questions. You know, I definitely see what you're trying to do here. I think there's definitely something that can be said about you know, making sure that we're engaging with students about their needs that they have. I do hope that, like, you know, we're still in session, and if there's more conversations on this bill, I hope that the students can be approached about kind of what they want to see and, like, how they would help shape this task force. I think there's potentially something here, but I think there's a number of stakeholders that probably should be talked to. So, but thank you, Representative Johnson.
Representative Dodseth.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative Johnson. I appreciate the intent behind this bill. It shows an proactive approach to try to prevent future problems and really bringing all the players in place. I can see where this could actually be a very effective task force, so thank you for bringing this to the table.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you. I was just wondering, Representative Johnson, what's the background check for these people that are going to be on this task force here? Because it's important to recognize that back in 2019, students of the University of Minnesota actually did on-campus and off-campus coalitions to talk about what organizing looks for renters. And a lot of the issues that they brought up was about safety in regards to folks who were doing security in these housing for students on campus and off campus, and particularly with students of color who are facing discrimination. So what's the makeup of the body and what is the background of that?
Representative Johnson.
The background would be who's ever appointed. There is no background checks on task force.
Representative Perez Vega.
I remember being a member of the Capitol Board Public Engagement Task Force, and I went through a very thorough background check, and it was a task force. So I was just kind of wondering what that would be like, especially if you're including students. That's my main, you know, students on the campus who are going to be with upfront cost that are debating that whether they can afford those in these times. Students that are working to be able to pay for tuition, you know, is it an equitable amount of students or is it just more of what I'm looking at as housing attorneys and two members representing nonprofit organizations as it says in 1.12? You know, what's the given? What's the application process for this task force?
Representative Johnson.
If you look up Minnesota Statute 1.5 or 15.059, that governs the task force like every other one.
Anything else, Representative Perez Vega?
Nope. Thank you.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Representative Johnson. I also see what it is that I think is the intent of this bill as the author that worked with the student organizations in challenges and barriers that are really facing our folks who are trying to obtain, you know, their higher educational goals. I'm just curious what engagement was done with anybody, whether that be with students, with Minnesota Housing, landlords, local legal advocacy groups. There's a lots of players in this mix, and I'm just curious who have you consulted and engaged in bringing this bill forward?
Representative Johnson.
I engaged with myself. When we do legislation, we don't have to talk to everybody. We can try to do things and try to figure things out by themselves. We use what's called our brain and use our common sense. This body is not told what to do, we decide what to do. If you're being told, you're not being represented the people you represent. You ask them for advice sometimes, but I've been around here long enough to know how to put together a task force. I've been involved in many of them. I don't care for a lot of them. I don't like having to do them, but I think this is one we need to do. And I want to make sure that the task force is put together with just enough people to get the job done. But I've also seen when task forces get too large, nothing gets done. So you try to find that balance. When you start talking to every single group out there, we'd have a task force of 400 people. Nothing would get done. You see how well 201 legislators get things done, sometimes not very well. where we have a small committee, we can get things done. So I wanted to limit the size of it, but try to make sure everybody was representative by at least one voice. That's why we have students from the metro counties. We have students from non-metro counties. We have the housing provider. We have the nonprofit organizations that assist post-secondary students. We have a housing attorney, so they somebody that actually understands the current law. Then we have a member of the board of the Housing Finance Authority, because that's the organization that's going to oversee this task force, because they generally deal with a lot of the rental issue and housing issue. And I want to get it done as quick as possible so in our next biennium we can deal with it. Because they have to have the task force expires on January 10th, 2025, right after whoever the new members are of that elected body, they can work with it. So they have to have a report to us before then, so we can figure out how we're going to handle it and what recommendations, if any, if all, that we do. That's why it's made up the way it is and why it's set up the way it was.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you for that. And, you know, as legislators, we have a really powerful role and an opportunity and what I believe is a responsibility to the folks who don't feel like that they have a voice and are heard and who want to be a part of these solutions. And I've also been a part of the creation of several task forces at the local as well as at the state level. And they come out of being co-created and strengthened by working with those groups. And, you know, I agree that there's something to be said about the numbers and the makeup, but I think to me, hearing that the lack of consultation, that's really hard to get around, whether it's the landlords or the students or the post-secondary educations, not bringing them in from the ground. I think also when, you know, in our latest example of bringing our student housing bill forward, how is it that we define student housing was one of the key hiccups. And so without that proper consultation and really defining the language in here, I think it leaves us really a lack of what to work with, what is a starting place. And so that needs to be expanded and expounded upon. And as Representative Vice Chair Igbaje shared about the equitable participation, the recommendations, there's just a number of things here that I heard it said earlier, but to me, I see this as a slap in the face to our communities and to our students, and I will leave it at that. That's how it feels with this piece, that I really believe we could have actually brought something forward in a good heart and a good faith in working together, and this just isn't it for me.
Are there other members that have questions? If not, I'll go to Representative Johnson for any final words on the bill.
Chair Howard, members, Representative Walsky, the intent of this was information for us. So we can find out what's going on. There was no intention to any slap in the face. As I said earlier, a task force is put together by us for us to get information. We decide who's on the task force, not outside groups. This body is the one that sets them up and tells our department they will work with them. If we get to any larger, I don't know if they can get the work done. We tried to have the smallest group possible, but still have everybody's voice available. With that, I hope you'll consider this. Because like I said earlier, the 11 years I've been down here, we've been dealing with student rental issues for 11 years and before that. So the goal of this is to have a limited number to look at it, give us recommendations how to fix the issues so we don't impact other areas of the rental industry in a negative way. And still have a way for our students who are getting educated to understand what adulthood is and how the decisions they make can affect their future. That's part of the learning experience. With that, I'll let it go.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. With that, I'll move that House File 2938 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. With that, the bill is laid over. Members, that concludes our agenda. I did want to mention this is tis the season where the legislature can be fluid. There is very well a chance that we may meet on Friday to discuss an additional bill for omnibus bill, so please look to your email. Hope to have that to you by the end of the evening so for folks can plan for that. With that, we are adjourned.